they don't even have to be a Trump supporter. I don't consider myself to be a Trump supporter. I will vote for him if he is running against Joe Biden. I'll vote for a ham sandwich over Joe Biden. USA,
home of the brave. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, and my fellow citizens, America's comeback starts right now.
From the land of the free and the brave, USA, I love my country, they can't take that away.
All right, welcome back. Financial Guys Podcast on the Financial Guys Media Network. Mike Spiraza in studio today. Have a return guest coming on. We've spoken to a lot on the radio show and on our podcast. Buffalo immigration attorney. I'm going to talk about a little bit national because I saw you won an award there, Matt. Also a national immigration attorney here, Matthew Colkin, joining us. But he does have offices right here in Buffalo, and we love to say that because we love to support Buffalo businesses. Matt, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the thing that you focused on most first. Let's talk about immigration. Every time we've spoken, it's gotten a little bit, I guess, weirder and weirder with what's going on, and sadder and sadder with what's going on at our southern border and even our northern border. What's going on in the world of not the legal side first, but just the world of immigration from what you're seeing and what's going on across the country?
Well, basically, what has happened is that the Biden administration's non-enforcement policies at the southern border and in the interior of the country have resulted in our immigration courts being completely overwhelmed with backlog cases, which is going to cripple our ability to be able to ensure that individuals are afforded due process. I mean, everyone that comes to this country is allowed to present their case before an immigration judge, especially if they have expressed a credible fear of return to their home country. And there's no way, given our limited resources, that we will be able to go through that backlog in the remainder of my career. And I'm still relatively young. I'm in the middle half of my career. I don't think I'll see conclusions of these cases until one of my children take over my practice.
Yeah, that's obviously a problem, and I think you're seeing that across the board with a lot of these issues. And Matt, to bring it locally, you know, we're talking national immigration here, but locally, what we've seen with the migrant crisis here and what Mark Poloncarz has done and his lack of action, you know, calling people like us morally repugnant, right? Those are the types of things the type of rhetoric they're saying. But you look at Mayor Adams in New York City, and you look at Mark Poloncarz in Buffalo. They're blaming everybody else for the decisions that they made, right? And we look locally here. We've had numerous sexual assaults. We've had numerous assaults. We've had a case of tuberculosis. We've had property destroyed, like local hotels and motels. I mean, what's it going to take, Matt, for these people to realize that these policies stink and they don't work?
Well, I think we're starting to see it because when you have tent cities popping up in Central Park in New York and expensive hotels are being overrun by the refugees that are being housed there, and the streets are. I just saw a video of migrants who are sleeping literally on the streets in front of hotels, and the line goes around the building. Our asylum system was not designed to allow individuals who want to come to this country simply to make a better life for themselves to be able to enter the United States into the general population, obtain employment authorization for what could be decades while their case winds itself through the process. And I have a feeling that once these Democrat-controlled cities understand that they don't have the resources to be able to provide for these individuals, that there's going to be a very steep shift in the political landscape.
Let me ask a question about that, though, Matt, because the thing that kills me is we all said, you included, said this was a terrible idea from the beginning. Not immigration, right? Immigration is not a terrible idea. Illegal immigration or people just walking across your borders without knowing who they are is a bad idea, right? I mean, I think anybody with a brain would say that. The left didn't say that. And now we have, I've heard numbers up in the 5 to 10 million range by the time that Joe Biden is done in office. isn't it too late at this point? Like, what are you going to do now? I mean, you can't find them all and send them back. They don't even return to court half the time.
You can.
Okay.
If you change the law to incentivize individuals coming forward and identifying themselves, which would basically require them to turn themselves in and give them a carrot to do so. If you provided them with a means to obtain employment authorization, if they were to return to their home country and then enter the United States lawfully, people would be motivated. Because most of these immigrants, and I know that there are bad apples amongst all populations, immigrant, non-immigrant, citizens, non-citizens, et cetera, most of these people really do just want to work and provide a better life for their families. And if you give them a pathway in order to be able to do it the right way, they'll do it the right way. And they'll be lines up. They'll be lining up all over the country to turn themselves in to come out of the shadows. And that's what we want. We want people to be fingerprinted. We want to know who's in this country, and we want to have people following our laws.
What do you think it takes to get there, though? And I know a simple solution may be, you know, a change in the administration that's in the White House. But what does that look like? How long does that take? And who has to get on board with that? Is that a Congress thing, Matt? Is that a presidential decision? Is that a, you know, local, state, and city governments come together? What does that look like, and how long does that take?
It's a near impossible task because we need to get the Republicans and the Democrats to agree on a solution. And back when Obama was president during the 113th Congress, I assisted with a member of the House Judiciary Committee to craft guest worker legislation that all got scuttled. And the Democrats and the Republicans don't want a viable solution for various reasons. They just want to use immigration as a wedge issue. So I don't feel as though there's any possible way that we are going to see legislation pass under the current administration. And depending on who's president will determine if there's any possibility in the next four years after the election. And that's unlikely as well, because every 2 years we've got a midterm, and I've been practicing law now since literally the law changed back when Clinton signed it. And we have been talking about trying to fix the law for the entirety of my career, because the way the law is created, it punishes individuals who make even minor errors that were unintentional and incentivizes people to break the law.
Yeah, I think the frustrating part, and I'm sure you feel the same way, is you bring up, you know, Congress and Democrats and Republicans. At the end of the day, they are not helping us, Matt, right? I mean, these decisions do not help an attorney like yourself. They do not help Erie County citizens like us. They don't help us at all, and that's what's so frustrating. I get you need your issues and you need to have your certain negotiating bargaining chips, but this one just seems like a terrible one to do that with, because it's impacting everybody. Again, I'm going to reiterate, multiple sexual assaults. There's an inmate right now, Matt, I'm sure you've seen this, in Pennsylvania on the run. He came here illegally, killed his girlfriend after committing crimes. I think it was in Brazil or somewhere else. This stuff, America is losing when Democrats and Republicans take issues like this and use them as bargaining chips or things they can debate.
Well, the only thing that the Republicans and the Democrats can agree upon is giving our money to Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It doesn't seem like there's and raising debt ceilings. Other than that, our legislative branch is completely broken. Our entire system of government is broken, and it doesn't give me very much comfort to know that there's no solution in sight.
Let's talk. I wasn't going to talk about this today, but let's talk about that. Let's shift to Ukraine for a second. You know, this debate for me is a tough one because, you know, of course, Matt, we don't want to see what's happening to people of Ukraine and civilian casualties. We don't want to see that type of thing. Nobody does, right? But I think my problem with the funding has always been, tell me what your goals and objectives are with the funding. right? Instead of just writing blank checks and not letting us know, they keep saying, well, we need to fight for democracy. Well, that's not adding up really, right? They're not having elections right now because Zelensky said it's a time of war. We're not going to have elections. Zelensky got there as president in a we'll call it non-democracy way. I guess maybe you know more than I do on this. What is the end game and how do we get there for Ukraine? Or is this going to be another Afghanistan war where we're just there for 20 years pumping money left, right, and center?
Well, I think that the only way we stop funding Ukraine is when politicians in this country stop sending their family members millions of dollars from energy companies. I mean, this is the biggest shell game in history. Ukraine, it was considered to be the most corrupt nation in Europe. This was a widely known fact prior to the invasion. And I oppose the invasion of Ukraine completely. Yep. But I also don't want billions upon billions of dollars funneled to the most corrupt nation in Europe with zero oversight and no end in sight.
That again, in line is my problem. I mean, you can't get answers, Matt. You know, you ask questions about this. Of course, we can't ask, like, you know, people in Congress, but you ask questions to anybody that supports the war. Right. I look at my pal on Twitter, Adam Kinzinger. The guy is all pro war. And I'm just thinking to myself, and again, this argument too, Matt, that, like, well, we don't have boots on the ground. Okay, that's true. But we're also giving them artillery. We're also funding them. We're also bringing over, you know, reservists into different areas, not in Ukraine, but around there. Like, we're essentially in without being in. Right. And that's my other point too. Like, what? And not to say I defend Russia, because Russia is evil and we all know that, and Putin's evil and we all know that. But, like, what does this look like to Russia when you play this game like we're not going to be involved in the war? But you are. You are involved in the war.
It's a proxy war.
Right.
Think of it this way. If let's just put this on a micro level. If you give somebody a gun knowing full well that individual plans on shooting somebody, murdering them, you're guilty of assisting in that murder.
Yep.
You're an accessory. And that's what we're doing. I mean, we are fighting a proxy war. We are fighting Russia. We're just not the ones pulling the trigger.
I can't believe we're here on that one, especially. And Matt, the last thing I'll say about this topic, and you know this because you're an immigration attorney, you're dealing with issues with that. With all the issues that America has right now, with every issue when you break it down between border, surging crime, record overdoses, you know, record suicides, inflation still here, interest rates at almost 8%. I mean, we have issues, and I'm not naming all of them. I'm just naming some of them. We have issues across the board, and our focus is funding another country's issues. And my question is, when can we have America first again? I think that is a simple answer, getting somebody in here that's America first. But what's frustrating to me is, at the end of the day, we just keep focusing on all the wrong things, and we don't focus on what we need to focus on here at home. And if we want to play the humanitarian crisis, Matt, we could play that crisis on every continent, and we don't do that. So why Ukraine and not, you know, the Middle East again? Why not, you know, there's been talk about in South Africa, the slaughtering of white people down in South Africa. Like, if we want to play this humanitarian crisis, China, right? They're paying little kids 5 cents a day. I mean, if we were going to play that, why aren't we playing that everywhere else? Is this just obviously a so we can put flags in our bios on social media or what?
It's so frustrating because there's really so much that this country needs fixed. We live in Buffalo, New York. Think about our roads and our bridges. Mm-hmm. I mean, our airports. Have you tried to fly anywhere? Every single day I go online and on social media, one of my friends is saying that they've gotten stuck somewhere and that they can't. Until we have the airline industry fixed, until we have our transportation system fixed, until we have our schools fully funded, so that there's shortfalls in all of the schools, even the best schools here. And I'm not opposed, and although I oppose a lot of the things that are happening in academia, our schools need to have the resources to be able to have our children be able to have athletic equipment or art yep. supplies or computers or whatever it is. The money that's being funneled over to fight a proxy war that we are borrowing, we don't have this money. We're just increasing our debt to basically just enrich the military-industrial complex, those who control it. And there comes a point where you can't fix the foundation. If the foundation is completely crumbled, you're either going to have to tear the house down and build it all over again, or you're going to have to lift the house up and build a new foundation and then put the house back down. We are in that stage where literally it's crumbling underneath us and there's no way to fix it.
Yeah, and I think worse than there's no way to fix it, Matt, I think nobody cares to fix it. That might be the worst part, right? I mean, you look at both sides in Congress, it doesn't seem like either one of them care to fix it. And that, to me, is the most concerning part.
Look at our leaders. They're too old to run for president of La Boca Vista retirement home, let alone the greatest country this planet has ever seen.
Yep. Yeah, you know, people ask me all the time, you know, are you proud to be an American? Of course I'm proud to be an American. Am I worried about America? Very much so. I can't tell you how concerned I am between, you mentioned it, education, between leadership, between, you know, what used to make America great. And I'm not saying with Donald Trump years, even when I say this, what used to make America great? Opportunity, right? Hard work pays off, you know, having whatever you want. If you want to go get it, like that type of stuff, you know, freedoms, those types of things were so important to
those little inconveniences like freedoms.
Right, right. You know, I mean, these are the things that they're just taking away from us. And that's going to move into my next topic here, Matt, with the Donald Trump stuff here. I mean, these indictments you see, right? I mean, you're an attorney. You know this way more than I do. Do these even have a leg to stand on, really? I mean, what is going on here in Georgia and New York City and...
There's a saying that you can indict a ham sandwich. You can get charges in an arraignment before a judge, no worries, and so without any problems at all. So my understanding is that there's four basic indictments. There's in New York a business fraud charges relating to alleged $130,000 repayment to Michael Cohen. And then there's the classified document charges in Florida because there were allegedly classified documents from the White House stored at Mar-a-Lago. I don't know if they were by Joe Biden's Corvette in Mar-a-Lago or not, but that's another story. There's a district court case out of D.C. for the federal indictment for the 2020 election interference, basically saying that there was a scheme to interfere with the peaceful transfer of power because he was exercising his First Amendment rights to comment on the legitimacy of the election, just like Hillary Clinton did for 4 years. Then there's the case down in Fulton County, which it's basically RICO charges saying that there's Trump and, like, I believe 18 others that were accused. I think it had something to do with coordinating to thwart the certification of the state's election. I mean, once again, I mean, wasn't there just a governor? There was an election. Stacey Adams completely declined to accept the legitimacy of.
Still is.
She lost.
Still is.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so and this is the problem. And forgive me for filibustering, but this is the problem. The problem is that average individuals who. They don't even have to be a Trump supporter. I don't consider myself to be a Trump supporter. I will vote for him if he is running against Joe Biden. I'll vote for a ham sandwich over Joe Biden. But I consider myself to be a constitutionalist and someone who has made his living operating under the confines of the law, which requires justice to be blind. And it no longer feels to me that justice is blind. It feels to me that justice is very, very much looking directly at a presidential candidate, that the Democrats, the deep states, the intelligence community, the media, social media, everyone opposes Trump, rather than allowing for talk about the peaceful transition of power. There's election interference going on right now with these criminal charges. All of these charges are the arraignments and the trial dates are all scheduled in the election year.
Yep.
So, I mean, we're in a situation where no matter what happens with Trump, half of this country is going to it's going to be kind of like O.J. Simpson, where half of the country agreed with the verdict and half the country did not. And it was very, very stark. And the problem is that when you undermine the legitimacy of the election by creating an appearance of impropriety through what appears to many people, many Americans, to be a political prosecution, well, now the foundation of your house crumbling, you're actively jackhammering it.
So let me ask about, and this is partly Trump, but also partly just people that believe in Trump or that vote for Trump. You look at some of these cases with the Proud Boys too, which I'm sure you've seen, Matt, and they're getting 17 years. Somebody the other day that wasn't even there on January 6th, the leader of the Proud Boys, just got 22 years. Again, I will stress this, and I'm sure you agree with this. I wouldn't have been caught dead there on January 6th just because I figured something, and I'm not saying I told you so, but anybody with a brain said this is going to get ugly probably, whether it's clashes between non-Trump supporters and Trump supporters or something like this, because now, especially now, right, you know there is a thing called the deep state, and you know that there are people intertwined in the deep state that you don't realize that are after you. I'm just telling you that. Put that out there for everybody. Be careful what you do and where you do it. But I will say, Matt, I wouldn't have been caught dead there. I wouldn't have been caught dead breaking in and walking in, right? That just doesn't – it's not a field trip, right? So I don't agree with those decisions to do that. However, why are we not treating BLM Summer of Love protesters the same way? Because some of those people broke into police stations. Some of those people broke into businesses and burned down things. Some of those did many things that destroyed the community. And you want to say, oh, it's different. It's the federal bill. No. There's no difference. If you're breaking and entering or you're doing things you shouldn't, you need to be treated that way. It's not like they walked into somebody's house in an open house, right? These people during BLM and the Summer of Love, they literally were burning down buildings. Matt, some of them were going, like Seattle Police Department was broken into. Many, many different areas around the country, courthouses and political buildings were broken into. Why is it? What's the difference?
Well, let's talk about what happened when Justice Kavanaugh.
Yes.
When there was a vote on that, there was hundreds of protesters that stormed the Capitol. That for the singular purpose of interrupting the confirmation vote, which basically was designed to attempt to prevent one of the three branches of government from installing someone on another co-equal branch of government, which is virtually identical to what happened on January 9th. January 6th.
Yeah.
And you don't hear of any charges. And that goes back to justice no longer being blind. There is a double standard in this country now. There are hundreds and hundreds of protesters can interrupt confirmation hearings for Supreme Court justice. Hundreds and hundreds of protesters can throw Molotov cocktails at the White House, injuring dozens of secret security agents, as long as the target is a conservative or a Republican. And justice is selectively prosecuting those who they deem to be a hindrance to their ability to control government. And it's a very scary place that we are in. I have gotten to the point, and I have spoken to a number of other individuals who have prominent followings on Twitter that are conservative individuals, that are lawyers, and we privately talk, and we're like, is it even worth sticking our heads up anymore? Because this is banging your head against a wall, and the only thing that you're doing to the wall is putting your own blood on it. And I'm at a point where I really feel as though, although I'm on this podcast today expressing my opinions on the subject, exercising my First Amendment freedoms, the idea that this country is turning into a totalitarian state is happening in real time.
And you can't even debate that. And here's my question, Matt, about this, because this is what drives me nuts about leadership on both sides, right? We know what the left's agenda is, so I'm not even going to start there because that's a waste of my breath. But the Kevin McCarthy's, the Mitch McConnell's, the, you know, Ronna McDaniel's, those people that are leading the right or supposedly leading the right, what is it going to take for them to get their heads out of their asses and actually do something? Because as you just pointed out, it's happening in real time and we're seeing it. We're watching it. We're honestly amazed by it. Anybody is amazed by it, right? Again, you look at these January 6th cases. These are happening in real time. You look at censorship on social media, right? You look at everything going on around you. The election, right? I mean, there's arguments about the election. I'm not going to say it was stolen, but there's arguments about who's voting, how they're voting. You know, do you need identification to vote? All these different things. What is it going to take for them to say, like, you know, McCarthy says, you know, one more time. It's like when I use this example all the time on this podcast, like when your mom or dad yells at you, Matt, and says one more time and you're going to go to timeout. Right. Like that's the world we're living in with Republican leadership. I don't know how many more times they need to see things, whether it be the treatment of Hunter Biden, whether it be these court cases, whether it be Donald Trump treatment. How much more do you need?
Well, I think the answer to the question is that there is, at this point, it's beyond fixing. I don't even see if somehow the Republicans are able to take control of both houses of Congress. I mean, I don't see them doing anything. Why would they do anything? They benefit from sowing discontent. You need to completely change the system. And why would they change the system? They're benefiting from the system. Politicians, it's all about raising money. It's a constant fundraising effort. It's not about legislation. And if I were elected, all I would be doing is trying to form coalitions cross-party to say, these are issues that we all can agree on, and I am not going to talk about anything other than things where we can meet in the middle. I'm not going to talk about any of the hot button issues where Americans cannot agree, where they have taken hardline stances. The problem is that you don't get reelected if you don't make the news cycle. And the only way you make the news cycle is if you call your opponent a terrorist, insurrectionist, a racist, whatever it may be, whatever the ist is of the moment.
So let's go into this is kind of in the same topic again, but let's go into Hunter Biden for a second. I'm sure you saw the news yesterday that they
said. I didn't, actually.
You didn't?
I didn't.
Okay, so they said there is a report out, I should say, that Hunter Biden will be indicted by the end of the month for the gun charge of, you know, owning a firearm without purchasing a firearm and lying on his application. Let's put it that way. That is the rumor now. I'm also going to just point out that, you know, again, they've said that Ray Epps was going to be indicted too, and he hasn't been yet. That was 3 months ago. They said Ray Epps was going to be indicted imminently, and he hasn't been. So, you know, do you believe that Hunter Biden will be indicted? If he is, you know, to your point, we'll be indicting a ham sandwich because they don't care about him and actually prosecuting him. What do you think happens there? And then what do you think happens with Joe Biden? Do you think he ever is indicted? And again, I'm not saying Joe Biden's guilty. Can we just get to the bottom of that? Right? You're so dead set on indicting Trump and putting Trump behind bars. Can we ask questions about Joe Biden and his son Hunter?
I don't believe that Joe Biden's son Hunter is ever going to be indicted, or if he is indicted, it's going to be it's not going to be the full. They're not going to throw the book at the guy. I mean, I know that that's what we saw with regards to what previously happened. I mean, there was a plea deal that was just giving him a slap on the wrist. If Hunter Biden was anybody other than Hunter Biden, if he were a Republican, we all know what would be happening to Hunter Biden. If he was Hunter Trump, we all know what would be happening to Hunter Biden. I mean, and that's the whole point. That's the whole point of this conversation, is that there's no longer faith in our the judicial branch. It all feels completely politicized. Because it is completely politicized.
Of course it is. Of course. I mean, we're seeing, you said it perfectly. You're watching it in real time, right? We're seeing it. And Matt, here's my problem. I don't know how you fix this, because the idea, you know, people think, oh, we just need an election, you know, and a change. That's not going to fix the decades of poor education that we've had. That's not going to fix the installment of some of these bad people, whether it be in the legal field, whether it be in the pharmaceutical or the science field, whether it be in any field you name, right? I mean, you're an attorney. You know there are very good attorneys and there are some bad ones. There are good judges. There are bad ones. I'm an insurance agent, right? There are good insurance agents. There are bad insurance agents. I don't know how you fix this in a quick order, Matt, because it seems like we are rotting from the core, and it's going to take many, many years to fix some of these issues in terms of bad politicians, too. I didn't even get into that. Like, how many years away are we from potentially fixing this, and is it fixable at this point?
I don't think it's fixable from the federal level. I think it's fixable at the state level. And when I say that, I think that's the only way it can be fixed. I don't think it will be fixed. The only way that I believe that we can fix and rein in the federal government is through a sweeping return to federalism, which is the original intent of the creation of our country, where each state had control over its borders, and that there was a federal government that was put in place for very specific purposes, interstate commerce, national defense, things of that nature, where it involved multiple states or entering into treaties, et cetera. Where if what needs to happen is there needs to be 25, 26 Republican-controlled states that are basically going to band together and say no more. We're not going to continue to fund the federal government, because the federal government is with regards to the taxpayer dollars, and you have lawsuits challenging the legitimacy of what the government is taxing us for. Because I believe that the federal government has expanded way beyond its designed intent, and that it's acting outside of constitutional boundaries. And if you can get a majority of states, if there are a majority of Republican-controlled states, and who knows if that's ever going to – if that's going to continue to happen. I believe there's 26 Republican governors. I can't remember anymore, so don't quote me on that. But in any event, if they're able to rein in the federal government, the only way it's going to be done is if the state governors come together and create one monolithic force.
I used to be an optimist, Matt. I really did. Now I'm turning into a pessimist. But I hope that we can do something. I think an election is going to help. I don't know that it will get everything we need done, as you just stated. I think we need a lot more than that at local levels as well. Before we let you go today, I do want to let you pitch your social medias a little bit. I know I read you won you're part of a pretty good selection of lawyers here in the top best lawyers as a tier one law firm for 2024. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the best lawyers through U.S. News and World Report has thankfully ranked my little boutique law firm as a tier one, and I was also ranked in the top 50 lawyers across all practice areas in the upstate New York area, which is basically the entire area above Manhattan. So it was I was very, very humbled to be considered one of the top 50 lawyers in basically most of New York State. It was a real honor.
congratulations on that. That's awesome. Keep fighting the good fight, Matt. I know it's, I know, especially for you right now with your practice and, you know, the lack of care for real immigration must be tough. We've talked about that in the past. Keep fighting the good fight. We very much appreciate you joining us, and we hope to do this again soon.
Thank you. And my Twitter is at M Kolken, K-O-L-K-E-N. Feel free to yell at me on the X.
Absolutely. Yeah, I got to stop saying Twitter. I can't help myself. I'm so used to it. And I say tweets all the time. I can't figure it out. All righty, folks. Again, if you do this throughout the week, 833 Fin Guys. Don't forget about our radio show on Saturdays, 1 to 3 p.m., and our three podcasts Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays right here on financialguysmedia.com. Download the app. The Financial Guys Media app is now live. You can download here all of our content on there. You know, like I told Matt, I'll say the same thing to you all out there. Keep fighting the good fight. I know sometimes it's hard and sometimes it's discouraging based on what you see out in the media, what you see out in the news. Keep fighting the good fight. We need more people fighting for what's right and fighting to make America truly great again. Folks, I will see you next Thursday. Thanks again for joining us.
Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, and my fellow citizens, America's comeback starts right now. From the